Now we should have Dr. Graham Lyons in the line.
Lyons.
Are you there, Dr. Lyons?
He should be there. I can see him, but he's muted right now, and I can't see.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Perfect. We can hear you, yes.
So you're also in Australia.
That's better.
Okay.
Ah, perfect. Now we can see you.
Is the lighting okay?
Yes. I hope it's not too late for you. I know it's late at night in Australia right now, at where you are, I mean.
12 minutes past midnight, Rainer, but that doesn't worry me. I've got used to having very full days lately. It's been quite hectic and will be so for a few more days. May I say it's a great honour and privilege for me to be joining your committee. Like Professor Zimmerman, I'm a great admirer of your work, and this is one of the greatest privileges I've ever had.
I can't believe this, because we are privileged to be able to talk to you. You know, we all know it's only the connection of the good people, of those who are on the right side, that'll make this thing go away. And I think we're close to a very, very crucial point. I think we're very close to a tipping point.
Well, thank you for including me in that subset of humanity. As I say, great privilege for me. Thank you.
So, Dr. Lyons,
you're an agricultural scientist
at the University of Adelaide, and you hold a PhD in the field of micronutrients. And you have, I understood that you have been very active in the Australian resistance. So could you maybe give us an overview of what you've been through lately, or what the situation is in your view?
Oh, thank you. Sounds like I'm becoming even more notorious than I thought I had. I probably won't be associated with the University of Adelaide for very much longer, I should imagine. In fact, I'm quite surprised that I'm still allowed to have an office at the campus to which I belong, and because I've actually been speaking quite publicly since early this year, and in fact sending out literature far and wide since about April of last year. So, but I've stepped it up recently and will continue to do so. So, yes, I'm glad to see that some of my resistance has been recognised. Unfortunately, well, as Professor Zimmerman noted, there is still widespread lack of appreciation of the parlous situation in which we are in among our population here, and in fact plenty of people out there who oppose sorts of things that he and I would do. They think we're cranks, and it's one of the things that's astonished me about this whole exercise, this whole episode, has been the number of people who have been sucked in by this garbage, this absolute rubbish, which is, I call it the corona hoax or the corona coup. You know, even seemingly intelligent people often mostly those people who pride themselves on being academics and highly intelligent folk, I found them to be some of the weakest of all. And that's one of the reasons that when I finally get kicked out of the university, it'll be like a badge of honour to me.
Wow.
I can carry on in this vein. I thought you might want to send me in a different direction, but I, like Professor Zimmerman, hope to be speaking tomorrow at the Adelaide Freedom Rally. I'll probably just get 5 minutes, and I've got a couple of, I will be actually targeting doctors tomorrow. Well, in fact, it's going to be today. We're into Saturday already here. And I will take on where I left off on the steps of Parliament House about a month and a half ago, and targeting those doctors who are still administering I call it the injectable purple Kool-Aid. For those who remember the Jonestown event of, I think, November 1978, a lot of young folk, of course, would never even have heard of that. But that was a sort of a minor death cult. We're now dealing with a global death cult. And so many people I speak to still think the virus is actually real. And the government's doing a good job in keeping us safe. This really, you know, you may have perceived already, I'm a rather angry person. Like, I can put on a smile and bring in a bit of humour, but just below the surface there are a lot of expletives waiting to erupt. Our so-called leaders who have sold us out to the internationalists, I don't call them the elite, I call them global parasites. And our so-called health officials who've taken their 30 pieces of silver from Big Pharma, and I spell that small p, capital H-A-R-M, small a, which reflects their business model. And so I sometimes almost get overwhelmed by disgust and anger. When that happens, I have to go running up Mount Lofty, which is it's not exactly a mountain in your terms. It's a hill overlooking Adelaide, where I live. And I have to put myself into a world of physical pain running up that hill, and that eliminates any other feelings. And if I can do a good time going up to the summit, I feel very good coming down, and I get fitter. So I try and make a positive out of what these quizlings and quackslings, as I call them. A quacksling is a subset of a quizling. You know what a quizling is, a traitor. We are ruled by traitors at the moment. And quackslings are that subset of quizlings who actively promote the so-called quacks, which is, it's not a vax, I call it a quacks, which reflects the pseudoscience and quackery used to promote it. So, I won't go further down that. Yes, no, you better send me in a different direction, otherwise I might blow up.
I was wondering if
I will,
you
but I...
It's a little bit more complicated when we're not together at one table, because you. Okay, may I ask?
Go ahead,
have you noticed the difference, like in the amount of people who are, you know, getting aware of this, the real situation now? Is there like an awakening going on in Australia? Can you feel that in your, you know, the conversations that you have with people, like on demonstrations or like other things?
Yes, I can feel. I think, I think all of us know that we're going to win this. I wouldn't be fighting if I thought we were all going to end up either dead from the quacks and all its boosters, or for those who survive that, end up as slaves on a digital plantation, as I think Patrick Henningsen described it. No, we're going to beat these evil bastards, and. As Professor Zimmerman said, yes, I think there is something of an awakening here. It's too slow for someone like me. I'm an impatient person. And, I mean, I could see what was happening in March last year, not this year. Why couldn't others see that? I mean, I'm not a genius. I'm a pretty good truth-seeking scientist. That's always been my rationale. I do not follow what other professors are doing. I've always, in my 22 years scientific career, I've always done what I think would produce the best results for people at village level in terms of nutrition and other public health benefits. I would have liked to have seen things happen a lot quicker. We could have saved a lot of lives, a lot of anger, angst, a lot of jobs. Not have the middle class on its way to being destroyed. But, yes, there is something happening. And when we look at the numbers who are on the streets of Melbourne about a month ago, I believe it was something like 700,000. And Melbourne is, it's escalated in recent years. It's probably a population of maybe 5 million. So that's a mighty proportion. And you've got to look at then multiplying that, say, by a factor, given the people who are still at home and who would have liked to have been out on the streets but couldn't be there for some reason. I would suggest that people like the traitorous Premier of Victoria, would actually be quaking in their boots now, because I think once they saw those sort of numbers, they, if they've got any modicum of intelligence or critical thinking inside their thick heads, they would have to realise that they are going to fail. And he'd better be looking at an exit strategy, I can tell you. And not much different for the rest of the premiers here. Professor Zimmerman described what's happened in this country. They've all taken their 30 pieces of silver. They're traitors to this country. And that also applies to the so-called health officials, who are charlatans. They're pseudoscientists. They're reading scripts from Big Pharma and Gates and the WHO. And I've got nothing but contempt for the whole bloody lot of them. They wouldn't know a genuine infectious disease if it leapt up and hit them in the face. And these are the people that are making the rules now and telling everyone how to live and wear masks in public. I'll get on to how I resist this in a moment. I'll quite enjoy this. And, yes, I think I've strayed from the original theme that I was on, but, yes, we are seeing an awakening, but it's slow. It's like a slow, well, the opposite to a slow-motion train wreck. We've had the, very fast-motion train wreck of the corona hoax, but the recovery and the awakening is too slow for my liking, but it is happening. And this is a numbers game, and the globalist parasites know that. And if we get enough people not complying with the, how shall I describe, the COVID diktats that we get from our outfit called SA Health here. How Orwellian and ironic is that title? They're idiotic, unscientific, unlawful, unconstitutional, and very unhealthy. Things like social distancing, constant washing of hands in poisonous chemicals which will wreck your skin, wearing of face nappies, aka masks and muzzles, greatly increase the risk of true infectious respiratory diseases. Even if there was a virus floating around out there waiting to pounce on us, which, of course, there isn't. Anyone who understands germ theory versus, well, terrain theory understands that. You don't pass on living viruses on the surface of things, for goodness sake. Even if they did exist, though, it would be like wearing a section of chain mesh fence across your face trying to keep out something the size of the point of a pin. So it's ridiculous stuff. And then, of course, the daddy of them all is the quacks, the very harmful, already demonstrably very harmful across the world, medical intervention, supposedly experimental. I don't believe it's experimental as far as the globalist parasites are concerned. They know it's harmful. They're just experimenting on dose rates. And a few other, what more horrible things they can put in there. They know it's harmful. This is what's been dumped on us. You know, I was a cattle breeder before I became a scientist, and I still am a cattle breeder in a small way. And I've been involved with breeding beef cattle since 1962. So I know bullshit when I see it. And the corona hoax is the greatest pile of bullshit which has ever been dumped on humanity. I say that without reservation, that the size of this hoax, this deception, is unprecedented. And it's absolute bullshit. And finally, to conclude this section of my rant, yes, people are gradually waking up, but bloody slowly. And I have to say that in this path that I've taken, it's had a pretty pervasive effect on my life. I've lost most of my old friends, so-called friends. Pretty well none of my family really support me in this. And I've given them my information going back a long way. I wrote a thing called 13 Reasons Not to Take the So-Called Vaccine, and I started pushing that out in early January of this year. send it all around the world to my colleagues on Pacific Islands in China, Colombia, East Africa. I've had some positive feedback from them. It's had almost no effect on the most of the people here in Australia who I've passed it on. I thought I was doing them a great turn, saving their lives by giving them this thing. Most of them have taken absolutely no notice of it and gone and got quaxed. Can you believe that? They said, oh, look, no, Graham, sorry, we don't believe you. We believe the government and the health authorities and the mainstream media. We don't think you're right. And so what more can I do? So I've taken that path, and I will not be deviating from it because I think I'm on the right track. I won't deviate from it. And I've made some very good new friends who are involved in the resistance to this thing. We've started our own group here in the eastern suburbs of Adelaide, and I help arrange the rallies. That's why I'll be there tomorrow doing things. It's opened up a whole new world for me. Hell, I'm not even sure that I'm going to be welcome at Christmas lunch. we'll see what happens there. That's going to be interesting. But I might be the only vaccine-free person there. I prefer not using the term unvaxxed because that makes it look as if vaccination is the norm, which it most certainly is not. I'm a vaccine-free person. And some people call us pure bloods. How do you like that? I quite like that. A stud cattle breeder, I can relate to that. There's a picture of the best bull we ever bred behind me. That was back in 1988, I think. So, I had quite a career of being a cattle breeder first. So I think I'm reasonably grounded. And one of the things that's astonished me has been as I mentioned before, the lack of resistance among so-called scientists who they're among the weakest buggers out there when it comes to standing up against this. The university is about to bring in a quacks mandate. The vice-chancellor has been making very, very strong indications that that's going to happen. I'll bet they do it before the first semester next year. Same with the other two big universities here in Adelaide. They're all walking in lockstep. They're all reading their scripts from the global parasites. But there's quite a nice little nucleus of us. We've just started in the last week, which will be resisting that. I haven't got much skin in that game, really, because I'm pretty well retired from the university. I'm called a visiting research fellow. They don't pay me anything. They just let me keep an office. But there are plenty of full-time professors and other academics who are dead against getting this poisonous quacks, and they will be resisting this solidly. So we're having a meeting an hour before the Freedom Rally later today, just consolidating that little group, see where we go from now. There are some interesting developments here. My legal advisor, I haven't touched on my misdemeanors yet, have I, is a person by the name of Stuart Lindsay. He is an ex or former federal court judge, federal circuit court. And he's my legal advisor. He acts still as a barrister here in Adelaide. He would be, I would suggest, the most muscular Christian soldier I have ever met. I'd have to say he sent me on a spiritual journey. I was a happy atheist for 22 years not always happy, but usually at the university during my scientific career. In fact, I had a quote from the great E.O. Wilson, a sort of a neo-Darwinian person or researcher who wrote a well-known book called Sociobiology, which he related ant colonies to human behaviour. this quote was, there is more content and grandeur in material reality discovered by science than in all religious cosmologies put together. And this was above my desk. It's still there, actually. I might tear it down now. But there are, I go looking at most of those people who are of that that persuasion, shall we say, and they are not fighting at all against what we're seeing now. They're as weak as water. And the best fighters I've seen have been some of these really strong Christians, and Stuart Lindsay personifies that. If I'll tell you what I do in the way of resisting soon, but if you think I'm tough, you ought to see the way he operates. So I've learned a lot from people like that, and I realise that this thing we are involved in is much bigger than just us. We can't beat these bastards on a temporal level only. We have to tap into whatever spiritual thing that we have, connection that we have, and I'm on a journey. I'm not completely there yet, but at least if I can say what I do, the way I live my life now, it's informed by two main dicta or tenets. One is from Henry David Thoreau: disobedience is the true foundation of liberty. The obedient must be slaves. And so when I go walking through Adelaide these days, I see a lot of slaves or would-be slaves dutifully clocking in with their smartphones. I haven't even got one of those bloody things. I see them as an instrument of our own enslavement, dutifully clocking in with these QR codes, as they call them, almost lovingly, wearing their masks, even out. They've been mandated for inside buildings and what have you here. People will even wear them out on the street. And they're three-quarters of the way to being slaves, I would suggest, maybe all the way there. So that's H.D. Thoreau. And the other one that really guides me is Solzhenitsyn's 1974 essay, Live Not by Lies. And the corona hoax being one massive lie, I will not bow down to any of the diktats that have been brought down in the name of corona. So I can at least look in the mirror at the end of each day and not be ashamed of myself. But if I get a chance to talk today, I'll probably only get 5 minutes. I'm going to make it really short and sharp, and I'll be targeting those doctors who are still giving that quacks, and I'll be saying to them, when you look in the mirror at the end of the day, who do you see, a healer or a harmer? It's about time that you threw off the shackles of Big Pharma, found a backbone. Hopefully you won't need to use a magnifying glass or, God forbid, a microscope. If you're a male, perhaps you could discover a pair of cojones. I'm going to rip into them, I can tell you, because they must know now that what they are doing is harmful. You would have seen Dr. Vernon Coleman probably 2 weeks ago describing the journal, the article in Circulation, which is a very well-respected journal for cardiovascular physicians, et al. They must know they're doing harm. And I might actually ask them to reflect on what happened to seven of their profession at Nuremberg, who I would suggest might have been doing lesser things even than delivering the quacks to people. So I hope that makes some of them feel very uncomfortable, because they need to stop doing what they're doing very quickly and get on the right side of history. So, yes, that's probably enough for me, from me for the moment.
Well, I think, Graham, it's so important to finally speak out and not to try and mince words. We have to call a spade a spade. And I think this can only come from people who are grounded, like you are. I keep telling everyone that those people who really know what's going on, and not just instinctively, but because they're well-informed, are the cab drivers who usually take me to our sessions of the Corona Committee. They really know what's going on. It's not the scientists. I mean, we both know that there's a new study out which says that surprisingly, it's not stupid people who are the tinfoil hats, but rather it is well-educated people. Well, I should say maybe so, but it is also very many of those people who are not educated in the traditional sense, but rather get their cues from, well, being grounded, from being in touch with reality, from not following orders. This is what one of the psychology professors who unfortunately died a couple of weeks ago, but we had him on our session a number of times. His name is Georg Lind. And he says, for a functioning democracy, you need two things. One is the ability to ask questions rather than to follow orders. And the second is the ability to engage in discussions with other people who hold other opinions rather than kill them or make them into tinfoil hats. That's all it takes. The problem is that there's only 20% of the population that has that, but it can be learned. And I think we're going to be those among those who hopefully will be able to teach such, in my opinion, truly important stuff. I'm really glad you're so outspoken, because for a long time, this is what is slowing the awakening down. Too many people who are talking about proportionality of these stupid measures. They should go right to the core and tell it like it is. This is about them trying to kill us. If we don't wake up and stand up, that's what they're going to do. That's what it boils down to. It's very clear. I keep telling everyone, had somebody told me this 2 years ago, I would have told them to go take their pills. But this is really, and I'm a lawyer. I'm used to rational thinking. Yep. But that's what this is about. And you're absolutely right. Spirituality is probably the most crucial, the most important aspect to all of this.
Oh, true. Yes, yeah, very.
I think it's also important, you know, that Rainer, like what Professor Georg Lind also always said, you know, it's like that you're able to like the moral competence, you know, that was always his catchword, you know, that you must be able to act according what you've realized is right and is correct and is moral. And that is also what a lot of people don't do at this point. You know, they see what's going on, but they're simply not able to say, yes, and I'm part of the problem if I continue to play along. And I don't need to be like, you know, a revolutionary with like running out with a stick. I should rather not do that, but I should simply just withdraw, don't do it, you know, and find other ways to really just work around, at least do that or speak out. But, you know, in a peaceful manner. But I think if a lot of people would go, you know, take this decision to live according to the moral things that they see, things would immediately change, you know.
Yes, how true. Someone said we've got, it's like a pandemic of cowardice in our Western societies. There's plenty of people I know who they just won't do anything. I think they must know that the government's acting badly towards them and has declared war on them, but they just haven't got the courage to do anything about it. They're, as Stuart Lindsay would say, they're not just asleep. They are pretending to be asleep. Yeah, and you can't wake up someone who's pretending to be asleep, and they're pretending to be asleep so that they won't have to actually do something against it and step outside of their cohort of comfortable individuals, or actually run the risk of losing a little bit of income perhaps. They're not even prepared to do that. And so I'm not happy at all with a lot of my fellow countrymen. I think they could have done a lot more. Some are doing a bit more. You're interested to hear about what happened in my court case, was yesterday. Oh, hang on, 2 days ago now. Because I live by that those tenets, I gets me into strife now and again, but I wear it as a badge of honour. Like, for example, I won't wear those masks and I bluff my way through. I've given myself an exemption. I say to anyone who who questioned me, I've actually got three conditions which preclude me from wearing those bloody face nappies. And because these days doctors have become so enchained by Big Pharma and by SA so-called health that they won't usually grant any exemptions for the vaccine or the so-called vaccine or for wearing face masks. Doctors here, I'm talking probably 95% of them, have an awful lot to answer for. And so I grant myself an exemption there. And the other one, don't sign in. The government's got no right to track you, particularly using the false pretext of a virus or a pandemic, which isn't, and won't do any of those things, and certainly won't be getting the vax. And I said to people outside the court the other day, I won't be going to the test match this year for the first time since 1985. I'm a bit of a cricket fan. And the Ashes test, so-called, between England and Australia is on in Adelaide at the moment, 4 days. But Adelaide Oval has now become what I call a quacks trap. It means you've got to be double vaccinated to get in the bloody gate. And then once you're in there, you've got to wear a mask all the time, even when you're sitting down watching the cricket. So I guess people won't be able to shout the way they used to in the old days. So I won't be going there, except possibly to protest outside the gate if I can get the time tomorrow. I probably won't. The zoo is the same. Can't go to the Adelaide Zoo anymore. And there are certain businesses proudly proclaiming that patrons will need to be double vaccinated from now. Well, they go instantly onto the boycott list of the groups to which I belong. So it's, you know, the noose is tightening from the parasites and their lackeys, their quislings and quackslings in this country. It's almost, I think Professor Zimmerman suggested they're lashing out, or you guys might have suggested yourselves. So I think they might almost be in their death throes. They can see that they've made their play to enslave the entire population, those that they don't kill, a little bit too early perhaps. There is an awakening, and when you look at those numbers that you can get in Berlin, and I remember seeing that rally where I think it was over a million strong, wasn't it, where Robert Kennedy Jr. was one of...
Yes, we were there. Yeah. We were there. We know.
Yeah, you were there. Yeah. That was brilliant. Yeah,
I told this story before. I know of a couple... a married couple who were, she was in the resistance, and he just couldn't believe it. He just couldn't believe that our own government has turned against us. Yeah, but he said, okay, I agree. I'm going to go to this demonstration in Berlin. That's the one where Bobby Kennedy and I spoke. Yeah. And he came along and he saw that it was completely peaceful. He saw that it was over a million people. We know it was over a million people because we have police on the ground. One of them works for us. And I was there and Viviana was there. And then he saw it is peaceful, nice people. Then at night he came home, watched the news on television. They told him there were 17,000 people, all of them racist, right-wing radicals, Nazis. Yes. And he turned to his wife and he said, "You've convinced me." That saved their marriage. They're both on the same side now, and they're real activists.
Yeah,
so
I remember.
The truth comes out, Graham.
It does. Yeah. Well, that's
what
the
about
third...
your court case?
Yeah.
What about your court case?
Yes, first of all, that reminds me of the third tenet I live by. Truth will come out in the end. That's what Gandhi said. He said, rely or have faith in the power of truth. I think satyagraha is the Indian term. And it may not work for you quickly, but in the end, it will prevail. It'll come out. So, yes, talking about Kennedy Jr., that's my early Christmas present. The real Anthony
it's
Fauci.
Bestseller.
Yeah, I got
it's
that
a,
about
it's
two
a bestseller
years ago.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. Robert Kennedy is one of my great heroes, and I to show you how little time I've had lately, I haven't even opened the covers of that, and I'm greatly looking forward to it, but I've been too busy. So it's going to be my Christmas New Year reading. Anyway, yes, my court case stems back to March of the year. I refused to submit to the fake invasive DNA collecting PCR so-called COVID test on having flown back to Adelaide from Brisbane. We were up there helping our daughter out, and my wife came back a week later, and the Premier of Queensland declared a snap lockdown on the very evening that I flew back to Adelaide. So I was met by operatives of the medical industrial complex that we have now, COVID branch, and told that I would have to self-isolate for 2 weeks and undergo 3 negative COVID tests. Well, I pretty well hit the roof there at the airport and just kept the expletives under the surface, but told them I was a real scientist, unlike those charlatans at SA Health, and I know this is a fraudulent test and I will not be undertaking it under any circumstances. So he went and summoned his superior, who was a policeman, told him the same thing in a loud voice so all around could hear. And he said, well, sir, you'll have to undergo self-isolation for another 10 days, 24 days. No mention of a fine or anything. So I headed home, and I did actually stay in there for 24 days. I was visited by 10 policemen during that time, and the first one tried to persuade me to again take the 3 tests. And I said, no fear. I told them at the airport I wouldn't. I'm telling you the same thing. And then they sent me a bill for $1,000, an expiation fee. And that's when I got together with Stuart Lindsay, and we decided that I would not pay the fee. I will elect to be prosecuted. So didn't hear from them for 5 months. Then in, I think, early October, I got a summons to appear at the Adelaide Magistrates Court. And I went along, and they wouldn't let me in the building because I refused to wear a mask. And so anyway, my lawyer went in. It wasn't Stuart. He doesn't wear a mask either. But it was the solicitor who went in. And I didn't actually have to be there. It was just a summons. But there were a lot of press actually out on the street, and I was able to hold my own court there. But I was appearing at the same time as the so-called appearing, at the same time as the head of Australia One. Have you heard of Australia One? It's a, it's not exactly a political party. It's headed by an ex-SAS lieutenant colonel called Ricardo Bozzi. He's got quite a following here in Australia. He's a very strong individual, a tremendous person. And he was living in Sydney, or still is, and he was there because he was not wearing a mask at the Adelaide airport in April during the time I was incarcerated in my own home. And he spoke to the magistrate by phone, and he took a common law approach, you know, that that approach you don't accept the validity of any of our, mercantile or commercial admiralty-based courts, call them what you will. And he ended up calling the magistrate a traitor and an imbecile. The magistrate ended up listening to him for a while. He said, I'm not listening to any more of this nonsense, and slammed the phone down. So his case has been adjourned to January. So I'm not really sure how far he's going to go using that so-called common law approach. But my approach was different. I actually hired lawyers and advised by Stuart Lindsay, and we had the next hearing 2 days ago, and my solicitor advised me perhaps not to try and get in the building this time, just stay outside. It still didn't need me inside, and they just adjourned it again. We're hopeful they might just drop the charge, actually. The police had not answered a number of questions that we'd asked them about procedural flaws in the way they dealt with me. And so we'll see what happens there. But we're hoping they will drop it. At any rate, I consider all this stuff a badge of honour. It doesn't worry me. Mind you, it's a serious business. The maximum penalty for what I did, my heinous crime of actually protecting my bodily integrity and the Nuremberg Code, is a $20,000 fine or 2 years in jail. Good. How's that for medical fascism in the state of South Australia? And actually, I've got a name for Australia these days. I call it the Quaxy Nation of Auscatraz. Quaxy Nation, not just vaccination. There was a book by Judy Wileyman called Vaccination, you know, Vaccination Policy in Australia. She's a great authority on that sort of thing here in Australia. And Auscatraz, we're not allowed to leave the country. Those who are out there can't come into it. I guess you could get into Auscatraz, or the real Alcatraz, just by committing a bad crime. That was even easier than Australia. But as Professor Zimmerman said, we're living under medical tyranny here, and those of us who are resisting constantly run the risk of being arrested and stuff like that. But at least I can look in the bloody mirror at the end of each day and not be ashamed of myself, not be having a coward staring back at me. And, I mean, you guys are the same. What you're doing is tremendous. You're a great inspiration to fighters here in Australia, resistors. That reminds me, one of my very good mentors is the, I'm not sure in Germany if Judge John Deed is a popular television show. It was made quite a few years ago. I've seen reruns about three times. But Judge John Deed is a great fighter against Big Pharma, Big Telco, any of those big outfits suppressing individuals, causing death and mayhem to innocent people. And Judge John Deed always prevails. And the writer and producer of that show is a man called Gordon Newman. And I approached him early last year when I could see what was happening here and thought, look, I need to connect with some people who know how to fight against Big Pharma and others. And, yes, I got hold of his email, and he lives on the Welsh border. I think he's probably about 80 now, but he's as sharp as ever, and he's always encouraging me in this resistance, and he does so himself. In fact, he's facing some case. His wife and he and their dog were walking in a wood within several k's of their home. They might have been outside the required limit of movement at the time. And he's having to go to court in January over that. Unbelievable. Well, I'll tell you, in the state of Victoria, here in Australia, we call it Danistan now, after Kim Jong Dan Andrews, the premier, the most corrupt politician who has ever operated in Australia's history. He is the most egregious puppet of the globalist parasites you could ever imagine. Man who should be spending the rest of his days in prison, or actually I can think of much better penalties for him. I better not say any more. But at any rate, this Gordon Newman just provides me with great encouragement, and one day, it's one of my greatest hopes, is that I may be able to travel back to England. I used to really like, my wife and I really enjoyed travelling to England and driving around the countryside. We had several friends there. Gordon Newman's probably the only one now. The others have dropped me. They think I'm a crank, I think. But, yes, one of my great wishes is to be able to get back to travel. I did a lot before, but when I was particularly working in the area of biofortification and food systems. I want to get back to the Solomon Islands, where I lived for 3 years when I was young, working on a cattle project, and want to get back to England, travel around by car again, love the history, and I'd like to be able to meet Gordon Newman. So they're on my wish list. But yeah, I forgot what led me into this. But I'm a resistor, and but I get no thanks for it from I'd say most of the people who've known me throughout my life. they think I've gone a bit silly, I think, a lot of them. I hope they'll wake up in due course.
You're getting thanks from us. Can you do us a favor, Graham? You mentioned Ricardo, I forget his last name, but I saw a speech that he gave. He was very, very inspirational. What's his last name again?
Bosi, B-O-S-I. Ricardo Bosi. I think he's of Italian origin. He was Lieutenant Colonel in the SAS, which is our elite air service of the army. He's got a spine, that guy. And he speaks well, and he's got a quite a big following. He's not the leader. It's not a political party per se. He goes to lengths to explain that to people. He says political parties are actually an abomination under the Constitution. They're not constitutional, and they've been used as an anti-democratic force by the powers that be to control people and deviate true democracy. So he says candidates who are independents in their own electorates, I'm talking about the next federal election, which I think it will be March. Oh, look, I'm not sure when it is, but he says we support candidates who have been put up by people in their own electorates as known to be very good people. They've done years of service there, and then if they would like to adopt some of the things that we recommend, we can say we endorse them. That's Australia One, but Australia One is not a political party per se, and in this country,
I think Graham, what's going to happen is ultimately we're going to get rid of political parties. For the time being, it is probably important to use them. For example, we joined a political party, the only one here in Germany, that goes up against the measures. However, they're not in parliament yet, but they are the party with the most potential, because there's so many people out there who would join it, except right now it's being infiltrated by others. We're doing our best to clean this thing up. But can you do us a favor and connect us with Ricardo? Because I saw his speech and it was very, very inspirational. I would love to interview him.
Yes, no, I'll do my best to do that. And I've actually spoken at one of their South Australian meetings here several months ago, and it's a good group. And yes, I'll do that. So connect. I'm a notes man. Connect Reiner with Ricardo. Yep, no, you'd get on very well with him. He's the sort of bloke you'd want leading your platoon or something. Well, he was much higher than a platoon leader. He was a lieutenant colonel, and he's disgusted with the current leadership at the highest levels in our army. You know, they haven't got a backbone. They're more interested in LGBTI than fighting the enemy. It's the people a bit further down that they never allowed to get to the highest levels, so-called. They're the ones still on our side. The others are traitors, the ones at the very top, just like the politicians and the so-called health officials. A lot of traitors in this country, and I guess it applies to pretty well every country. That's everywhere. One of the things that astonished me. The evil bastards who've perpetrated this have been working at it for a long time, as you know, and they've got unlimited money to do whatever they want to, and they can buy off most of the people that they target, certain ones, though, like yourselves, of course, and Ricardo, and people like Robert Kennedy Jr., John Ioannidis, you know, the great medical statistician from Stanford. Gates and Big Pharma were not able to buy him, whereas they have been able to buy so many of these other so-called epidemiologists, virologists, infectious diseases specialists, who are actually just charlatans. They've sold out to the Big Pharma. Absolutely. They're the ones who you usually see speaking on the TV or writing in the newspaper. You know, if I was still watching the TV, I'd find a brick to throw at it these days. I've pretty well turned off it. And the sources of information I really like are, well, your own committee here, of course, and UK Column. I get a lot of good information from them. particularly when Patrick Henningsen appears on a Friday, and I joined 21st Century Wire, that's his outfit. I think he's an outstanding supplier of information about geopolitics, and he's a brilliant guy, and he's such a, he's like you people, he's humble. The best people are humble people. They never get full of themselves or carried away, but gee, they're great. And Robert Kennedy, of course, his outfit, Children's Health Defence, and the Health Ranger, Mike Adams. I haven't got enough hours in the day to listen to all the podcasts and what have you that they put out. And in any case, my wife gets cranky if I spend too much time doing this sort of stuff. So there's a lot of good information out there for those who seek it. But yes, if you're happy with getting what the mainstream media and the government tells you, and you will, you're doomed basically, unless you wake up very quickly. Yeah.
That's one of the pieces, one of the most important pieces of advice we got from one of the psychologists when people asked us, what can we do to regain our peace of mind? The first thing he said, disconnect from the mainstream media. Don't watch public television anymore, because that's what most Germans do. And that is so important. Disconnect from the mainstream media. Go out into nature, take a walk, go run. That's what I do. I run with my dogs. And then if I get really angry like you do, I go down to my fitness room and really? I fight it all off. That's
I knew we had a lot in common, Ryan. When I first saw you, I liked what you're about. And that's it. You've got to disconnect from, well, it's like the Truman Show. It's sort of hyper-reality that they've enmeshed people in, and the average person doesn't realise that they are entrapped in this rather unreal situation. And then they go thinking that, yes, the government is a benevolent outfit for looking after us, keeping us safe, very Orwellian, and they haven't been able to connect in their brain. It's sort of like cognitive dissonance. But as you said, the government's actually actively trying to kill us. They just can't accept that. A benevolent government's never going to do that to us. This is our government, you know. That's why they find it hard to step outside of that hyper reality. And but unless they do, they're probably doomed. Yeah,
they are. They are. They're walking into the showers. Into the showers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I never thought I would see a situation like this. Well, none of us did, I don't think, in our lifetime. Mind you, I actually started studying the outfit responsible back in the mid-1980s, and largely from the financial perspective, those who are controlling the world's banking system and the UN and all those sorts of things, and infiltrating countries, trying to break down nationalism, this sort of thing. And then I had to step back from it after being threatened with divorce eventually, because I was spending too much time on it. You know, it can take you over, because it's a pretty big thing and it's a fascinating area of study. I remember poring over Tragedy and Hope by Professor Carol Quigley. It's a massive tome. I think Stuart Lindsay's got it at the moment. He hasn't given it back. He likes it so much. And that was, they took that off the shelves, out of the libraries, out of the bookshops, because Professor Carol Quigley got too close to the mark. He was revealing too many details about what these global parasites had been up to for the previous couple of hundred years. But I got hold of a copy a few years ago. And, yes, I used to immerse myself in that, but only up until the late 1990s, and then I had to step back from it for a while. But I've got back into it from February last year. That was the trigger. And even I was fooled by it for 1 week. 1 week when I looked at, again, here comes the television again, leads us astray, watching those images from China, people supposedly falling dead in the street, the Chinese building a hospital within 10 days. Only the Chinese could do that. the authorities welding together the gates of the compounds, a steel gate to lock the hapless inhabitants within. And then I just started looking at the data, and there was nothing happening in the surrounding counties. This wasn't a pandemic or the start of a pandemic. It was bullshit. And then I started listening to John Ioannidis, and he backed that up. He saw through it from the start. It was just a concocted plandemic, scamdemic. And that's when I started writing about who was probably behind it, predicting what was going to happen. There was already talk of them developing a vaccine from quite an early stage, and I could see where this was going. No one would take any notice of me, though, but most of the things that I haven't had to alter very much. The flyer that I wrote in April of last year warning people about this so-called vaccine that was coming, and still people are often not taking any notice of me, which dismays me.
No, it's different. It's different now, Graham. It's different just, now.
Yeah, look, there isn't. You asked before. There is an awakening, but to me, it's so bloody slow. What's wrong with these people? Someone—I think it was Dr. Tom Cowan—said a couple of weeks ago, "We're seeing a pandemic of people who've decided not to think. Facts mean nothing to them, and of course, it's a pandemic of lies, propaganda, and fear porn from the mainstream media in cahoots with the governments. They're the true pandemics. It's not a pandemic of a virus, for goodness sake.
No.
So many people.
Well, Graham, we're going to have to let you go because there's another Zoom call that I'm going to have to get on in a couple of minutes. But
At least you're still up at a decent hour. Here it's 7:01 in the morning, and I haven't written my short talk for tomorrow because it's all up here, and I don't need notes for it. I'm going to rip into those bloody doctors as long as I get a chance, and a couple of other things, but I've got to keep it within about 5 minutes, so I'll write it in a few hours' time. But look, I thank you very much for allowing me on your program. It's been a huge privilege for me to be able to meet you and your colleagues. And
vice versa.
You're a fighter, and I want to see a lot of the perps brought to justice in an appropriate manner. And we're looking to your group to lead the charge there. I don't want to see them getting off the hook. When we beat them, I don't want to see them just drifting back into the shadows from whence they've come or under the rocks from whence they've come. I want to see them dealt with. And
I don't think they're going to get away.
No,
I don't think they're going to get away.
It's important, you know. It's important. It's absolutely, crucial that we really get them, and that they cannot go back into these positions because the same thing is going to happen again. You know, it's really,
exactly.
I mean, I think the ones who got their fingers dirty this time, you know, they must not have any responsibility anymore because they really, they're not, you know, they're out of control and they're so immoral.
Absolutely.
I think it's...
No, true. One of the final thing I want to mention was I've forgotten to now was I like the works of the great medical philosopher Ivan Illich from the 1970s. He wrote a book, famous book called Limits to Medicine, otherwise known as Medical Nemesis. Ivan Illich, Illich. He was a genius of some sort, and he was also a Catholic priest. And he foretold exactly what we're seeing now. He said, unless Big Pharma is stopped doing what it's doing, if it continues on its current trajectory, this was in the early 1970s, it will end up destroying humanity. So this is what we're seeing now. So I've got his book here. I'm revisiting it at the moment. And he foretold all this nonsense. So they're making a pretty good fist of it now, but... we're going to beat those. bastards.
You know what? You know what? You know who Rudolf Steiner is. He foretold this exact same thing in 1916. So those people who were always closer to reality and who were in touch with, I suppose, spirituality, they have known for a long time this is going to happen. But this is the end game. It is their end game. We're going to finish them.
Exactly. We don't want our grandchildren having to fight this war, do we, Ryan?
No way, Jose.
Great to meet you.
Okay,
and,
Graham.
Look, I'll get Ricardo's details somehow or other to you. Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
Great, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Good luck with your
speech tomorrow.
Thank you, and we intend to have a good rally, and I'm sure you'll have an even much bigger rally in Berlin. It'll be massive.
Absolutely.
You're watching. Good evening.
Thank you, Graham.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ja, Viviane, wir sind am Ende der Sitzung.
Leave meeting.
Good evening.
I don't-